This is CliffCentral.com.
All righty, good morning. This is the Gareth Cliff Show. It is the 9th of July, 2019. Gareth is away and will be coming back tomorrow morning. Yes, he will be back tomorrow morning.
On the shows, yeah.
Yeah, it took a lot of thinking about things here. The calendar is a lot of work. But Ben, Leanne and I are here for your news and some general team talk and banter to get your morning started. Or actually, whenever you're listening, we'll get the next phase of your day started somewhere, somehow. Just before we head into some news, though, I want to remind you a conversation that we had yesterday, actually, about, well, we all make judgment calls based on personal bias, and this happens naturally in everyday life. But what happens if you or someone else have a bias in crypto? What are the most common types of emotional biases in crypto? And how do you, as a person, prevent investing based on emotions? Well, join Sean Sanders as he delves into this emotional bias of crypto conversation on this week's Beyond Bitcoin with Revex to help you identify the traps in order to avoid them. This and all previous episodes are available as podcasts now on cliffcentral.com or wherever you listen. And actually, Beyond Bitcoin is brought to you by Revex and by Any Crypto Bundles in July, and Revex will guarantee your investment for an entire month. Sign up to Revex and use the promo code RISKFREE, that's RISKFREE, all caps, one word, to guarantee your investment. T's and C's apply. And also, on the note of new podcasts that we have as cliffcentral.com, is our podcast series, Humans for Sale. This is a podcast series around human trafficking that's brought to you by Hope Risen Foundation, which is an organization that works against human trafficking, and also made possible by Pembani. And I have to say, I worked very closely with the team in making this happen, and it has been, for lack of a better term, eye-opening to learn about this. And maybe the topic might be a bit off-putting to you, or it might seem dark and gloomy to you, but actually I think listening to it will equip you and educate you more than really anything I've ever taken in around this topic. I think, you know, human trafficking is not a far-off issue. It's not something that happens in Europe when a little girl gets taken from a father and kidnapped in a car, but it's happening in our malls, it's happening in our schools, it's happening, you know, in our public centers. And I think anyone who just wants to be more responsible and be more empowered should be listening to this podcast series.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's not really going away. We thought like that might go away because slavery obviously died, so to speak, but it's happening. It really is.
Yeah.
It's a huge market still. It's growing, actually.
It's multi-billion dollar industry.
Well, there's various spin-offs. I know you get into the talk of like harvesting organs. There's some very horrible things that people do out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happening.
And it's not that drastic as well in some cases. It's just some people, for example, who have come into the country legally looking for work, and they'll end up working for a small business, and the business owner will take away their legal documents, which basically makes the person not able to move around or open accounts or, you know, just live as a citizen of the country. That's the case of one of the survivors that we spoke to in the series, who says he came into the country legally and his documents were taken away and he was forbidden from leaving the property. You know, it could be happening in your neighbor's yard. So it's nothing to get depressed about, but rather it's actually very inspiring to hear how Hope Risen Foundation is navigating the space and the amazing work that they're doing in the sector as well. So it's called Humans for Sale. I think take a listen just to empower yourself to learn more about this topic, and spread it around. I think we can all use some of this information. So awesome products coming from cliffcentral.com. Getting to some of your messages from this morning. Dudley says, morning gang, hey, it's great having Ben back more often. As much Leanne, I think I see Ben's head swelling just a bit more.
Yeah, he's thank goodness he's wearing a beanie that's stretchy.
And then Dudley says, as much as I want your business to succeed, Ben, the show is missing your wit and moans. Please come back Monday to Friday at very So, yeah, peace and love, peace and love.
I'll give it some thought, Daddy.
I'll just think about it a little there.
Yeah.
Your wit and moans, that's your true legacy.
Well, I mean, look, the guy wasn't going to spend all day with adjectives here. Those are just the two he chose. A lot more.
Yeah, we do appreciate you, Ben. And then Alex sent us a voice note on Telegram, and you can be like Alex. You can send it to us 079-748-2090. Let's take a listen to that.
Morning, guys. I hope you're well. Ben, I think you guys were chatting about really bad sports star commercials the other day. And I don't know if you've seen the series of MWeb ads that have come out of late. I think they feature some of South Africa's cricketers and rugby players. But I've never seen something so shocking in my entire life. I'd like to get your thoughts on it.
Alex, I haven't seen it, but thank you. That sounds exactly something like I want to watch.
Now you'll want to watch it for the bad rating that it's received.
Oh, okay. I've got it now. I'll watch it after the show. But this is what this looks very amateurish.
I don't know.
Is this where Herschel Gibson is? Anyway, okay. I'll watch this and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
All right. Mandy says, hey guys, the Twitter button on the...
Excuse me.
Bless you and you. All of us under your spray. Mandy says, hey guys, the Twitter button on the app is not working. All right. Thanks for letting us know, Mandy. We'll let our team know and... hopefully, we'll solve that for you as soon as possible. And then, who is this? Graham sent us a photo saying, Durban July 1966 and Durban July 2019, how things have changed. And it's a photo of three ladies, and by this we'll presume that they attended the Durban July back in 1966.
Yeah, there's that one.
And then a photo of Zoto Wabantu at the Durban July this year.
So the ladies are all literally clutching their purses and wearing hats and below the knee dresses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how would you describe what Zoto was wearing?
She's wearing a scream mask with where the eyes and mouth are. You see that thing? I think it was Donovan Goliath tweeted about it.
Would you call that a bikini?
Yeah, it's kind of, but it's less than a bikini.
A bikini with some mesh and looks like a fishnet.
The vagina's like only just covered.
Oh, yeah. If you do want to just bring yourself into 2019 a bit, you just Google Zoto Wabantu and who she is. And it's
Also, just go onto Twitter.
She's really out there.
At Donovan Goliath. Designer, looking for anything specific? Zodwa, have you seen this movie? Have you seen the movie Scream? Designer, say no more.
Well, I'm just not surprised. Zoto's just known for wearing as little as possible. And that's how she's now made her money. People book her at gigs and clubs to go and perform in next to nothing. So,
but you're right. Her vagina is very, very much almost not shown. Or almost shown.
Mm-hmm.
Almost not covered.
It's just not great.
Is she like a high-ranking scholar putt?
Actually, yes. Yes. But she's just an entertainer. She's not a stripper, even though she walks onto stage in some cases and she'll announce this to the crowd that she isn't wearing any underwear. And she'll wear like...
Well, I think at this stage it's a given. I don't think she has to... I mean, that's like redundant that she would probably go out without underwear.
If she was wearing underwear under that bikini, it would be like a band-aid.
No, there's just no underwear that she wears. If she does, then she'll wear very slinky thong, and she's now paid like 30 grand a pop to go and dance at these big festivals.
So she doesn't sing or anything?
No.
That's very weird. Okay.
You can see your brain short-circuiting just trying to understand what this is. Well, now she also has a reality show, so yeah, she kind of is the new popular scholarpat, to bring it in context.
Remember the other day we had two of the cast from the Hot Zone in?
Yes, on Friday.
I managed to watch the first two episodes of the Hot Zone.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was brilliant. So it's a National Geographic thing. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, they say based on true events. It's actually quite gripping. Just looking at Rotten Tomatoes, I always look at the reviews there. Some of the critics say they call it a harrowing drama. They the suggestion of certain horrors is gripping. The mounting paranoia and the visceral impact of a solid jump in the dark horror movie. Oh. I mean, something as simple as her testing this is Julia, and I never know how to say her surname.
Julianne Margulies.
Just from a simple act of testing something chemically using microscope slides and a dropper, just watching that is, you won't believe how scary it is.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm at the point where she has like dead monkeys in her car and all sorts of things. So, yeah, it's pretty gruesome. And the actors that we had in, the one who played the doctor.
Bohang.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He, I don't know how he survived the shooting of this film because he gets splattered in blood and fleshy vomit. It's like literally dripping off of him. And I thought, how did he even get through that? It's horrible.
Well, it's not real blood, Leanne.
It was still gross.
Just let her live in fantasy a bit. Did it explicitly show the panic at that time yet? Because I mean,
no, not yet. It's only building up. So they don't know what it is yet.
Because you're seeing people dropping dead. You're seeing these, you know, like
only
these weird.
Only one person
function.
Has died so far. No.
I can't imagine what that's like to see that gruesome, gruesome death, and you're like, well, what's going on? And it's confusing the heck out of the medical team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty hectic.
I'll give it a watch. I saw it on Catch Up.
Yes, it is on Catch Up.
I saw it on Catch Up, so I'll make some time with it. I want to binge it properly.
Did you watch Chernobyl? Chernobyl.
I did.
No, but actually we also got another message from Josh here talking about it. Says, good morning team, just a quick question. I've watched Chernobyl, brilliant, but I was thinking, why would something like that not happen here in Cape Town at Kuburg? Hope you have a good day. Regards, Josh.
Well, the whole thing is that they used, it was the Ukraine, right? Yeah. They used a cheap way out of securing these
rods
in case of a disaster. So instead of using a more expensive option, which wouldn't have resulted in the disaster, they used cheap stuff.
Mm.
So I don't think it's even legal anymore to do that.
Well, that was the whole thing. And if you do carry on and watch the last episode, is that they were going to do what they would normally do in the Soviet Union and just sweep it under the carpet.
Yeah.
But the dude who basically sold his life for the cause said, like, yes, the guys who caused this tremendous fuck up fucked it up, but they also had dodgy equipment, so there was always a fail safe. There was always an out, even if you were going to be a cowboy with the whole procedure. But unfortunately, with these substandard rods and equipment, that's where the real kaboom.
Yeah. It's such a confusing process, but it's all explained so well in the final episode.
But also, like, nuclear power seems cool otherwise, though.
Yeah, it's really got its good uses.
Yeah.
Great review there for nuclear.
Well, it's better
power
than burning coal. I mean, there's a reason that people in Secunda aren't so lekker, because they've got to breathe in that stuff all the time. And there's, like, the air quality up here in Gauteng isn't as amazing as it could be. And Mpumalanga as a province is, like, dodgy in a world standard. Burning coal is not that great.
Hmm. I was reading a story about a Chernobyl digger claw, which was found by an expert in radiation. And he stumbled across this piece of machinery during a tour of the area. And this claw is so radioactive that if you just touched it once, it would kill you immediately, and that's 33 years after the disaster.
Whoa.
Well, if you saw in the episode 1 of Chernobyl, when there's firefighters are the first people on the scene,
yeah,
and they have no idea what's really happened. They just think it's been an explosion, and the guy picks up that piece of graphite, but the graphite's been in that reactor, and his hand's like really sore. Like, oh, really, 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 really sore, and he's like, well, what the hell happened?
33 years after the fact.
Mm-hmm. This particular piece is
man, humans are
being
nothing,
labeled the most dangerous object in the exclusion zone. Yeah, oh, pretty scary. It was a brilliant series, really. I mean, I would never have understood everything behind it without having seen the series, because you'd have to do so much reading and research.
Mm-hmm. You know, people still work there, huh?
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Like, now they've got this massive, like, dome over it. There's been hundreds of millions of big currencies to get it right. And people still catch a train every day to go work at Chernobyl. Just so that they can try and maintain this thing. Mm. But, like, you think of all this time, and this reactor is still an issue. Like, they
what put, a stuff up.
Like, 3 years later.
It's crazy.
Wow. Anyway, what else is in the news, Leanne?
It's been, let's talk more about documentaries, because this is one that I really want to see.
Okay.
And Sia, it's right up your alley.
Oh, let me guess, is there some murder?
Yes, okay. It's about the killer.
Okay.
It's specifically about one killer. His daughters have now spoken out and said they had no idea that their church-going dad was this man.
My dad is church-going.
Yeah, it's called I Lived With a Killer. The Iceman, and it's going to be on Crime and Investigation, and it's the daughters of the Iceman killer who murdered 200 people over 30 years. He was particularly brutal. He used to shoot his victims in the Adam's apple and then feed them alive to rats.
No.
What a dick.
Yeah, his name is Richard Kuklinski, and he was the All-American dad who cooked barbecues for his neighbors, took his families on annual trips to Disney World, attended church each Sunday. But he was a professional hitman, a serial killer, and he used to do the most horrible things to these people while they were still alive before he killed them. His first victim he killed at the age of 14.
Was he killing in the name of Jesus?
No, he was.
Because sometimes these guys justify it like that.
I think it was just his crazy upbringing. He was born to a violent alcoholic father and a religious mother, so there might have been that sort of thing. But yeah, his first kill was a local bully. He used a pole and then buried him in the woods. He was also known...
Sounds vigilante-ish.
It does, but for the rest of these people, no. These are his words. He said, my favorite technique... is a nasal spray bottle filled with cyanide. But he denied ever using chainsaws because that would leave pieces of meat all over my shirt. Why would I want to ruin a good shirt? So do you realize what you're dealing with here? Oh. The level of psychopath.
Yeah. He did like a nice crisp pressed white shirt though.
And he was very abusive to his wife, and his daughters actually plotted to kill him, and they told their mother about this. But they just didn't get around to doing it.
The daughters plotted to kill their own father.
Yeah, because of his abuse.
After they discovered it.
No, because he was abusing the mom. They didn't realize any of this until he was arrested in the 80s. He was arrested finally in 1986 and given 2 life sentences. So now this documentary covers the story from their view and their experience.
What do you do if you were to discover that?
No.
About your own relative.
And even one of the daughters had an unbreakable bond with her father in spite of his violent behavior. She just adored him. So to find that out, that he's killed over 200 people. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. So that's definitely one I'll be watching.
You see, the manner in which, I've said this before, the manner in which someone commits a murder says a lot about them, you know. If you shot from a distance,
look, murder is wrong and completely. Doesn't matter how, but the level of psychosis,
with rats involved, that is some
and cyanide and
twisted stuff.
He used to freeze the bodies so that he could kind of put if ever the bodies were found, people wouldn't be able to tell exactly when they were killed.
So he enjoyed it. He absolutely enjoyed it. Here's a bit of some more info on Richard.
Well,
Iceman Kuklinski poisoning their food with cyanide. Man and wife Barbara movie. Interesting curse. Let rats eat them to death. Richard Iceman Kuklinski alleges to have murdered over 100 people before being caught in 1986.
Richard worked for the mob as a contract killer and enforcer, but was also known to kill people just because they wore out their welcome or if they looked at him funny. His early life is, unsurprisingly, troubled. His father works as a brakeman for the railroads, and it's almost a blessing when he's gone, because when he is home, he beats Richard and his three siblings for no apparent reason.
So
their mother is no safe haven either. She's
Now, that's a very common story, right? So if someone is drunk and abusive, you've got to go and actually investigate. Like, what kind of shit kids are you bringing up?
Yeah.
You know, like, this is the most basic version of the Minority Report. You know, that Tom Cruise movie, Look into the Future and Stop You from a Crime You're About to Do.
Uh-huh.
Like, if someone is got those characteristics, it's like, no one successful is like, I was successful because my dad was an abusive drunk, but yet he was nice to us.
Yeah.
These are the guys that make serial killers. So they've got to be investigated. That social, like, phenomena of drunk, abusive, manual labor worker.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some nice guys in the mix there, but these are the people who are breeding serial killers. Like, let's take a couple steps forward here. Not wait for the bodies to show up. Let's just go investigate these abusive old drunks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting how a serial killer will not necessarily have come from a father who was a serial killer, nor will they produce children who become serial killers. It's not that. It's the way that they were brought up.
Yeah.
Sure.
Ooh. Okay, let's listen to a bit more of this.
Abusive and doesn't exactly spare the rod. Seriously. She beat them with a broomstick. Richard spends his early days like most of the kids who grew up in the Jersey City projects, being an altar boy and finding different ways to kill cats. His first homicide is in 1948 at the age of 14. The local bullies, they call themselves the Project Boys, had beaten him up one too many times. So Richard takes the rod out of a closet and beats the leader to death. Richard isn't caught for this murder. He isn't caught when he gets older and murders people for embarrassing him in bars. He isn't caught when he finally starts making money killing people for the Gambino crime family. He met his wife Barbara when he worked at a loading dock before crime paid the bills. They get married in 1961, and he goes on to break her nose several times and abuse her to the point where he told his daughter Merrick that if he ever went too far with their mother, he would have to kill all of them so there would be no witnesses.
Hold up.
You know what? You should have.
Oh.
We should have videos watching Sia reacting to the absolute horror on his face.
Your own father says to you, you know, one day, if I were to ever go too far with your mother and kill her, I'd have to kill you guys too, so that there's no witnesses. Oh my goodness.
Imagine being brought up that way.
Oh, that is...
That's just your life, your everyday life.
Oh, man. Oh, that's twisted. Okay, just a bit more.
If anything can be important to someone like him. He claims to have killed Robert Prange, his murder mentor, because he sort of threatened Richard's family. Prange was better known as Mr. Softy because he drove a Mr. Softy ice cream truck and was rumored to have stored a body or two in the freezer. Softy really opens Richard's mind to various ways of killing people, including taping a bomb to a remote control car, shooting a person through their door peephole, and spraying cyanide in their face. In the end, Richard is arrested in 1986 after Dominic Polifrone goes undercover for nearly 2 years to catch the Iceman. Richard is tried for the murders of Gary Smith and Danny Deppner, two crime associates that he kills by poisoning their food with cyanide. He also confesses to killing George Maliban, who threatened his family, so Richard shot him in the face. And Louis Mazgay, who Richard shot in the head and then kept in a freezer for 2.5 years before dumping the body. He's sentenced to 120 years in prison. He eventually admits to killing crooked cop Peter Calabro in 1980, and he gets an additional 30 years. He ends up serving his time in the same facility as his brother Joey, who raped and murdered a young girl when he was 25 years old.
Another one in the family.
Yeah.
In 1951, Kuklinski agrees to be interviewed for a documentary where he describes, in somewhat vague terms, some of his more interesting murders. Like the time he tied a person up and let rats eat them to death. or when a man was praying for Richard not to kill him, so Richard said, okay, I'll give you half an hour to pray to God to change your circumstances. And then 30 minutes later, killed him. Or when he killed a man on Christmas Eve, then went home and watched the news coverage as he put his children's toys together. Richard Kuklinski died in 2006 at the age of 70.
Yeah, that's pretty.
I'm tapping out of this conversation now.
Just one more way that he killed someone. He flagged down his victim at a stop sign and put a gun to his head, bundled him in the trunk of the car. He then took the man to a cave in Pennsylvania where he rigged up camera equipment and left him to be eaten alive by rats. 4 days later, he returned to find disjointed bones of the man and a camera reel documenting his slow and painful death. And then his brother's a rapist as well.
He enjoyed this. There was some sort of satisfaction, something gratifying about the entire process. I'm no Dr. Phil, how you could link it to his childhood and how he's abusive, that's a whole other story.
Are you ever going to mock a man or look at him in a strange way in a bar again?
You never know what will set someone off.
That's so true.
And I think that is what fascinates me about people who kill or torture in this way, not just abuse, but torture, is how one incident or the smallest, slightest thing could just have
triggered them
and change your whole entire life.
I often think about it when I'm driving around. I've experienced road rage often myself. Mm-hmm. And you can't start a fight with someone on the road. You don't know their circumstances at all. You don't know what sort of day they're having, what sort of week they're having, or what sort of year they're having.
Or what's in their glove compartment.
Yeah. You just might push the wrong button at the wrong time.
Yikes. Okay. Can we chat about some more, something a little uplifting, something more positive? Just right now, being dragged into some nasty, nasty
this
roads.
This is a little less stressful, literally, and it's about crying. A scientist has found that crying during a specific time of the day, noch al, can help you lose weight. So they're different.
I'm interested.
They're different tiers of tears, right? Different levels. Mm-hmm. See what they did there. It all has to do with the hormone cortisol. Cortisol is produced in the adrenal glands and is the body's main stress hormone. Plays a huge role in helping us maintain a healthy weight as well. So when we suppress our emotions, the hormone is induced, surging cravings for fat and sugary foods. Crying, specifically the production of psychic tears, they call them, release toxins that would otherwise heighten cortisol production. So you get basal tears, which are your basic functioning tears. Those keep your eyes moist. And then you get reflex tears or irritation tears that are being introduced by environmental factors like smoke or chopping onions. Mm-hmm. And then psychic tears, which are triggered by emotional unrest. And they prohibit the body from storing additional fat by hindering the production of certain hormones, namely cortisol. So this doctor behind the study even went as far as to recommend that we watch sad movies or ruminate over failed relationships between the hours of 7 and 9 p.m. to receive optimal fat-reducing crying effects.
7 and 9.
So if you're going to have a cry, just hold it off, but it needs to be real. Until 7 o'clock at night.
Ben, you really hurt my feelings, but I'm not going to react now. Wait for 7.
Also, so
pull out your old wedding albums, do all of that at 7.
Also really consider it, because then you're not at work anymore. Because it's always awkward when someone cries at work.
Yeah.
So awkward.
That's the silliest study I've ever heard.
Can you believe it? But if it's going to help a person lose weight, I'm all for it.
Might be something.
If I can do it just by crying. Well-timed crying.
If you want to lose weight and weight is an issue, maybe you can cry over that. Just, I don't know what's happening.
Oh, gosh.
Who is this doctor who spends their time researching this? Imagine. I'm just going to the lab today, going to my practice, need to just do more investigation. On
that's what I often feel like. Obviously, these doctors are on these grants or whatever. They've got funding towards things. It must be kind of cool when you're at a university or a place with like a lot of money and you literally can, like over beers with your mates, go, okay, what are you doing this month? Oh, I'm researching weight loss through emotional crying at the right time of day.
Through psychic tears.
Oh, that must be so great. Imagine if like that's your job for the next like few weeks.
His name is Dr. Aaron Newfield of the Los Altos Optometric Group.
Los Altos.
Los Altos. Just change all the vowels.
Yeah, and why did you need to put on an Afrikaans accent for the Altos?
Did I?
Yeah.
Did I?
Are you going to the
Altos?
Are you going to the Donkey Steve concert next?
Yeah, lekker so.
Ja, oor frik.
Brought to you by Fuck, F-A-K.
So I read something interesting yesterday around some wealthy South Africans right now.
All their money's going overseas?
Yeah, well, here's another study that was done. It's the AfriAsia Bank of South Africa that released their wealth report for 2019. So they've been crunching their numbers since December of 2018. And they've now come to the conclusion that wealthy South Africans hold a total private wealth of $649 billion. That's 9 trillion rands.
Mm.
This is how much the wealthy South Africans hold. Just let that sink in.
All of the wealth.
But this figure actually, however, shows a decline in the trend of at least 10% according to the study. So the report shows that 39,200 South Africans had assets of $1 million or more.
And that's what you need to immigrate. I think. Isn't it $1 million you need?
Well, if you want to have some sort of a lifestyle, yeah. That's what gets you going.
39,200 South Africans have assets of more than 14 million rands.
Where do these people hang out?
Oh, the report actually states it.
Oh, really?
Leanne, okay. If you are on the hunt for multimillionaire, this report is for you, so I'll get into that in just a bit. These 39,200 South Africans also had 2,070 net assets of $10 million or more. That's 140 million rands. And 649 of those 39,200 South Africans had net assets of 100 million rands or more in private wealth. And that's 1.4 billion rands.
Sure.
These people need to be my friends.
See, where do they hang out?
So do you want to know where
they're all over the place? Because the thing is, like, these people, they don't all make money in the same way. So they're all very different people. Some of these people could be like tow truck mechanic empire owners. Like greasy guys in Crocs.
So finding out where most of these people live and eat and dine and what they drive, so you can be on the lookout for that. This is the ultimate stalker report, actually. So the top three cities in South Africa with dollar millionaires is, no surprise here, Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban.
Yeah.
So, okay, Leanne, at least you're in the good place.
I'm somewhere
right
near,
now.
Yeah.
If you break down those areas, these dollar millionaires are most likely in the Kruger Park area. They're in Cape Town. They're in Umhlanga and around the Garden Route as well.
Yes, Garden Route, lots of money.
Oh, do you want to know what their hobbies are?
Yes.
Golf.
Yes, there we go.
Ben, no surprise there.
No.
Mm-mm.
And also fly fishing.
Yeah, I can totally understand that.
Look, give me one of those ill-fitting apron merging into pants outfits.
Waders.
That thing.
Get you into some waders.
They look like dungarees, but they also look like aprons. Slot me in one of those.
They look like a big bucket.
If I get to find a dollar millionaire, whoo-wee. Yeah, let's make things happen. So in terms of what these dollar millionaires drive, although they drive luxury vehicles, wealthy South Africans prefer SUVs. Mm-hmm. And this is supposedly according to their space and also for safety concerns.
Yeah, dodgy roads makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. So their popular SUV brands, this is what you can look out for, Rolls-Royce, the Rolls-Royce Cullinan in particular.
Whoa. How many Rolls-Royce Cullinans can you sell in one country? For something to be popular, there's got to be numbers behind it, right?
And who knows? Maybe they import these very specifically.
Because if there are five Rolls-Royce Cullens in this country, I'll be surprised.
You reckon so?
You know what a Rolls-Royce Cullen is?
What's the retail price? Let's look that
up. We'll have to ask George on Friday.
Mm.
But guys, think about it. If you buy an SUV, there's like so much to go for. But a Rolls-Royce Cullinan, like, it looks like a stately home they've strapped wheels onto.
Oh.
That's what a Rolls-Royce Cullinan is.
Oh, I just Googled a picture. Ooh.
And like, Rolls-Royce don't so much just throw 100 of these into a market. Like, this is... Yeah. You think, like, no one's taking this on risk on a dealership, right? Like, all the high-end kind of people. This is a difficult thing to kind of maybe put in there.
You know it's rough when they aren't even putting the retail price.
No, then it's always a POA. This kind of car is always a POA, price notification.
I need to keep this picture like in my car, just driving around looking for these cars.
It only made its debut in South Africa in December last year.
Look, it'll be around 8 million rand.
Is that how much they are?
It's a stately home on wheels.
8 million rands on a car. And general folk always say, oh, you know, cars are an investment, you know, it depreciates, don't buy expensive cars. Dollar millionaires just don't care.
No, but when you've got an 8 million rand Rolls Royce Cullen, you've got a 100 million rand house. It's all relative. This is someone's Hyundai iX35.
Yeah. They also love Bentleys and they also love Lamborghinis as well. Their luxury car brands as opposed to the SUV brands, well, no surprise as well, Porsche, Ferraris, and Bentleys. And then when it comes to shopping, Leanne, this is now you can make even more notes.
Mm-hmm.
This class prefers to shop in Sandton City and Hyde Park in Johannesburg, mm-hmm. V&A Waterfront
I'm going to go with bullshit than that. These people with this much money, 8 million rand in a car, they're going overseas to buy stuff. They're not going to slum it in Sandton City. And then get hijacked on the way home by the Rolex gang. I call bullshit in this study.
Hyde Park Corner, I could squint maybe at that. Yeah. Because it's not that busy, you know. V&A Waterfront in Cape Town, I also don't think so.
Oh, okay. I finally found how many there are in South Africa, sorry. South Africa will be receiving 8 vehicles in total in 2019, all of which have been sold. That was said in December.
Okay,
so I don't know if they've brought in more since then.
Yeah, but it'll very much be like a pre-order thing. Like, whoever stocks them here, I think they'll never take a risk and say, yo, let's just go and get like 10 of those Cullens and put them on the floor and see what happens. This is all pre-order stuff. With all these high-end stuff, it's all pre-ordered.
True. And then according to this study, they also shop in Gateway, in Umhlanga and Durban. And the category is dominated by a lot of luxury brands like Paul Smith and Burberry and Louis Vuitton. Can I just say that again?
I think it's actually Vuitton.
This is a very interesting study.
Sorry.
Never mind. And then it also breaks down a lot of like the restaurants that they frequent, a lot of the watch brands that they use and collect, and also the banks or rather the wealth management companies that they use. I think this is fascinating.
So, yeah, I get to see these people sometimes because of one of my clients.
What does your client do?
I'm just going to mention the name because there is only one type of this thing in South Africa.
Okay.
And that's World's Finest Watches, which is in Nelson Mandela Square.
Mm-hmm.
And we recently had an event there, and a relaunch of the store, which was remodeled, and invited esteemed clients and guests.
Oh.
And you see the people rolling in there and it's like, oh my gosh, they've arrived.
Do you think they're more brash?
No,
unassuming.
Unassuming.
They're really wealthy.
Some of them actually, some of them didn't want to photograph, for instance, or if they were photographed, not to publish it.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, now that's the difference between wealth and just
I do that, I'm not even rich.
Yeah, you're basically rich, but without the money.
Yeah, I'm so rich without the money. You get to an event, so can you take a picture? Like, no, thank you.
No, please don't publish that.
Don't take a photo of me.
That's how you can tell I'm poor as all hell. I'm like, yeah, let's selfie it.
You're
let's
at the selfie photo. Wall. Ta-da!
Well, there we go, Leah. And there's your tip to being feeling rich today. Just tell people you don't want a photo. Straight away, they'll think you're rich.
Sorry, where will you publish that?
No.
Have you got my name, the spelling of my name right?
No, I don't endorse that. No,
please
I don't.
Please don't do that.
No, I like to be behind the scenes rather.
You should actually make fake business cards and say, look, if you really do want to publish a picture of me, chat with my publicist. This is their number.
See, but that's still, you know, you're still wanting attention that way.
No, you're looking to sell now.
Oh,
it's so pompous. It's great.
Wendell says, I'm guessing all these billionaires are old. Judging by?
Not necessarily. If it's new money, they might be middle-aged business people.
This has given me more hope than anything. 39,200 South Africans have assets worth 14 million rands. Come on, folks. Like, I'm sure we can band together. Look, if you marry me, Rich, then we'll all benefit. I'll be taking you on my yacht in Bora Bora.
Sia, if you do find one of these people and marry them, please don't forget us.
No, we'll all, you know, meet up on a yacht
because once a year Ben and I don't have much chance of meeting up with one of these people.
Well, Ben is taken already.
Exactly. And I'm just...
I don't want to meet someone like
not
that.
Not takeable. So it's up to you, but please don't forget us.
Leanne, you were in the room with them a few weeks ago. So, I mean, you can't really blame anyone else but yourself.
Yeah, but I was working, you know.
Okay. All right. Let's read some of your messages as well. Riette says, there's a geological fault line running past Kuberg. Cape Town has been due for a 1 in 100 years earthquake. Oh.
Mm.
This is a little earlier while we were talking about Chernobyl and what the chances are that it would happen in Kuberg in Cape Town. Someone else says, trying to get their name. Is it... Oh? Don't think it's crisis as your
crisis. As
your but they say, imagine Kuberg Power Station fucks out. Cape Town is screwed forever. Yeah, we don't want to think about that. Cindy says, cry yourself thin. That's genius. You'll be thin but thoroughly depressed.
Which is the same thing, well,
maybe,
I heard.
Maybe better because you've released the hormones.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know what I'm talking about. Just go on. I didn't do the study. I'll just shut up. Don't cry, Sia.
Just call it what it is. Just final story for this morning before we wrap the show up. I just think this is so devastating. I understand the human error in this, but it's also very sad for the couple involved. This couple is suing an IVF clinic in the United States because they were undergoing the IVF process and they had... created an embryo. Is it create? It sounds quite clinical, but yeah, they.
Well, I guess that's the what they're trying to do.
It probably is a word,
but they had created an embryo.
Yeah,
and
we're gonna have Dr. Robin like once a week. We write this down, and then we just get the clarity.
Just like 10 minutes every week, just like go through all of these things, and this IVF clinic then inserted the wrong embryo.
Ooh.
In
the wrong
woman.
Oh dear.
I would totally sue. You know how stressful this whole process is for people and how expensive it is.
Absolutely.
And your chance of this working is so slim. So for them to cock this up so badly, totally sue.
So here's some more info.
Well, there was no cock up anything, but anyway.
Leanne.
It's a turkey baster.
After spending more than $100,000 on in vitro fertilization services to become pregnant, an unidentified New York couple say they finally succeeded. But when they gave birth in March, the Asian American parents claimed they were shocked to find neither baby was of Asian descent. The lawsuit claims genetic testing confirmed the babies belonged to two other couples, forcing them to give the babies up to their biological parents. They still don't know what happened to their two embryos that should have been implanted. The lawsuit names co-owners of Cha Fertility Center, Dr. Joshua Berger and Simon Hong, as responsible for the, quote, unimaginable mishap. Human error is not uncommon at IVF facilities, according to IVF expert Jake Anderson.
And it's this agonizing process to grow embryos. It involves almost 200 different steps. And when you assume that this happens to thousands of patients every year within that laboratory, all of a sudden you've got a lot of moving parts.
More than 1 million babies have been born in the U.S. through IVF or similar technologies. But Anderson says recent headlines about clinics destroying or mixing up embryos raise valid questions about the painstaking process.
Have we become reckless and too careless with people's most important genetic material in their future happiness.
In 2009, Carolyn and Sean Savage experienced similar loss upon learning the baby they had just conceived through IVF was not theirs.
Oh, no.
How much do you sue for? What but then, is exactly, suing enough?
Like, to go through that entire term of that.
And then you have to give the baby up to its original parents.
Yeah, but then imagine like being
and
the original.
And they don't know where yours are.
But being the original parents is like, that must also be a weird like dynamic.
Oh, is it now you're given your baby?
It's like, well, okay, well, here's your baby. Just come out of me, but here's your baby.
And at least for...
I mean, do they compensate them?
Yeah, it's a little...
Nice fruit basket. Like, what do they do?
Thank you for...
What do they do?
Thank you for carrying my child.
Condolences card.
It's at least a bit of closure for the couple who, yes, you were carrying a child that isn't yours, but when you give birth, at least you get your real child. This couple who's suing doesn't even know where their embryo is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it would all be fantastic if it worked out. Well, it would be the best of the situation if it worked out that you just swapped babies at the end of it all that were born at the same time.
Right.
But to have gone through the process, especially when you've wanted it so badly. Mm-hmm. No, it's just unacceptable.
$100,000.
Oh, I thought
that's not even worth.
Oh, I thought that's what you're saying for.
Emotion.
That's what they spent on IVF.
So that's what they're in for. Then they get their hopes up so high, mm-hmm. like so high, as in like it's finally happened.
They spend more money preparing for the baby.
Like a lot of the time, this IVF stuff is what can actually end a relationship because the stress is so extreme.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And then there's the resentment on either side because you know one of the people is the issue, and then they produce someone else's kid. Wow. I mean, this is like Dr. Phil. On like another level.
Yeah.
I'd be happy with 25 million.
And then to sue, do you know how much money you need to sue a medical facility?
Well, I mean, this is a blunder of note. This is a
you still
very
need the,
obvious
You still
case,
need the though. Money to do it,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, but there's a reason why you're spending 100,000 rand is that with everything, the insurance cover and legal stuff is always built into price and medical stuff. Because there's a chance you're going to get sued.
This is so bad.
There's a chance you're going to get sued even if you do your job right. So that's, it's going to be messy.
I get cases like suing because a surgeon left extra gauze in you while they were sewing you up by mistake.
Or lopped off the wrong arm.
No, that's extreme. And this IVF case is also very extreme to me.
Yeah.
I think you can. You definitely have a strong case and a strong fight in court. You know, gauze or something, they left scissors, okay, sorry. Maybe the medical practitioners might actually one-up you and win a case. But this, I carried a baby that is not mine. And now you've taken that baby away from me. You're rightfully so, as you're saying, Ben. I got my hopes up. I would definitely charge for what my body went through if I was a woman.
All of the doctor's fees.
The emotional distress. Mm-hmm. I'd say the public, what is it? Like the public perception on dignity.
You have like a feeling of shame and embarrassment.
I have to explain it to my family why
and
I
also
don't have a baby anymore.
This couple will never recover from this.
This is rough.
Keep us updated on that.
Mm. All right, well, let's call it a day on that note, right? What a case and a half. Well, thank you so much for having us on. This has been the Gareth Cliff Show. Tomorrow morning, Gareth is back. I was going to make a song of it, but I decided to stop.
I'm not helping you. I'm out.
No, we're hoping you're playing a song already from the actual system.
Then we'll see you on Friday.
Yes, see you on Friday.
See you Friday, yeah.
Ben, it's the reunion of you and God Laws tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, see ya.
Exactly. Thank you so much for having us on. This is the Gareth Cliff Show.
This is CliffCentral.com.